Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New Human Living Radio Show, bringing you powerful interviews to awaken the power in you. Learn more at newhumanliving.com. And now your host, Les Jensen.
Hello and welcome to the show tonight. I'm really excited about the content we have. We're going to be looking at some of the work that Joseph Campbell did in mythology, the creative impulse, the role of the artist. It's going to be a powerful lineup. And part of the reason I'm excited about that is our guest, Emmanuel Otto, who's got some really deep experience with the material that we're going to talk about. You know, I like to think of the hero's journey as being able to have your ego perform at the soul level, to be able to let go of the fear and the concern at the little self level, so you can embrace the impulse, the creative juice that you're fed at the level that your soul can dream it up. And if that doesn't sound like an exciting ride, I think we might be missing something. So I don't want to wait too long, so I'm going to go ahead and welcome our guest tonight, Emmanuel Otto, who's been working in business and education, expanding the consciousness of the planet. How you doing tonight?
I'm well, Les. Thank you.
So what originally attracted you to mythology and the artist's impulse?
Well, you know, growing up, I'd never considered myself to be an artist or an artsy type. I was kind of a nature boy, and I also liked to read a lot. So I'd go playing out in the mountains near where I lived, and I'd also read quite a bit, mostly fiction. And that included myths, but it wasn't, you know, that wasn't like I honed in on myths from very early on. It was just part of everything that I was reading, and I also loved to watch movies. And I was also raised within the context of a religious interpretation of the Christian text and the Judeo-Christian text, and it regarded it literally. I was, you know, raised in a fundamentalist Christian home, and I learned all those stories as well. And really the moment that came for me where it really kind of, I became much more interested in myths was when I encountered Joseph Campbell's work in 93. And I was working at an art gallery and an art studio, art instruction studio, and we did framing and a lot of different things. We also had a lending library that had Campbell's now it's called Mythos, the Mythos series, for people who have heard of that or read that. It was called Transformations of Myth Through Time at that point. And then there was a biography called The Hero's Journey. And what really attracted me to that is when he said, you know, the artist is a mystic with a craft. They fulfill a shamanic role. And I was doing a lot of reflecting on you know, what are the issues in the world? Why are things, why do people go to war? Why are people hungry? Why are all these problems in the world? And his insights seem to be such a key point, such a key part of arriving at solutions that I was instantly attracted to it. And the main insight was that the artist plays a shamanic role for the community. And what that means to me and to Campbell is they go into a transpersonal space, even an overtly shamanic state of consciousness, for inspirations for their artwork. So you can take the medium of painting, the medium of film, and you can apply it to lots of levels of consciousness. But I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about artists that have gone into very deep spaces within themselves to receive inspiration, and then they also have the technical capabilities of rendering world-class art. That combination is huge. Think of what the films like Star Wars have done for the world in terms of raising consciousness. And really, this is what it's about. There's Star Wars, there's The Matrix, there's Avatar, there's The Fountain. What these do that maybe other movies don't is they really shift the cultural perspective up. And that also, and what that looks like is recognizing your circle of care to be more than the people in your family, more than the people in your race, more than the people in your religion, but everybody on the planet. And that the artist that is going to, that really embraces this, their community is now a global community. And that's ultimately the only way we're going to turn things around, is because we need a new story. And I'm sure you've heard this before, and your listeners have heard this before, but it's a lot easier said than done. And to awaken creative people at this time to step fully into that role is critical. Just as it was critical for artists to be in the Renaissance, when a new form of art started to become known to the culture, that directly led the way into the Age of Enlightenment. And these aren't movements that happened by accident. You know, there were people like the Medici family in Florence that were funding a lot of art projects and were translating important philosophical texts so that artists had more informing them than what the church was telling them about spirituality and what is possible within the culture at that time. And so that's essentially what got me into it. So I wasn't transfixed by any particular stories. I was more transfixed by what artists can do today in terms of reviving the what you call an amniotic fluid that is our mythologies, that's our stories, and transforming them from stories that are ineffective or perhaps disease-ridden to ones that are effective and healthy for global culture. And the simple formula behind that that Campbell shared was when you're in alignment with the natural order of things, which is what myths do, then nature yields its bounty. That's the simple formula there. I hope that answered your question.
Oh, sure. Just a side note, you might want to improve your relationship with your microphone because your audio's on the low side and it can waver a little bit.
Okay.
I like what you said about the bringing a new story to the tribe. And so imagine that you're a listener listening to this and you just don't feel that artistic gene, like you don't feel like you quite fit the shaman role or the role of the inspirer, or I like to think that every flavor of our society has these giants in that are awakening now, and they're everyday people who have gone through a career for perhaps decades in the old paradigm, in the old story, and we're all kind of watching this collective story play out on the stage of the world media. I see that so many genres have opportunities to rebirth themselves, to reinvent themselves. How would you suggest or describe the notion that that creative impulse in you, no matter who you are, is the thing itself?
Absolutely. You know, well, we're coming out of a chain of epochs, of eras that have been, as time has gone by, they've gotten shorter, and the next one coming in quicker and quicker and quicker. And, you know, it started with the agricultural, went Age of Enlightenment, scientific reasoning, the industrial, the information gathering, information work, and we've gotten to a point where we've really have all this information siloed into all of into these, the cloud where we can access them. We have access to the information, and now it's about bringing it together creatively. I believe that we're moving out of the information age very quickly into what many people are calling the consciousness age. I call it a creative age, where our efforts, most people's efforts are going to be needed to be engaging creatively. Whereas, you know, for thousands of years, everyone was engaged in some way producing food. Industry made it so that not as many people needed to be engaged in producing food, and then more people were engaged in going to the factories, and more people are engaged in going to their job in the corporate world. But now we're seeing this flat world, the Thomas Friedman flat world, where we do have a global society. The actuality is that we have a global society, and machines can do things that we used to do better than we ever could without mistakes, and much quicker. But what machines can't do is think creatively. And the definition that I really love that Joseph Campbell and his wife propose is that the artist is a mystic with a craft. And that really blows that definition way beyond the scope of what would be traditionally considered to be the arts. So anybody with a strong skill set that also has a contemplative practice that allows you to touch sources of inspiration that are much deeper than your basic needs. It actually allows you to be informed from a transpersonal space, the Gaia mind, the universal mind. That is going to infiltrate every area of society. So, for instance, I have some what would be considered skills in the traditional arts. I'm a trained vocalist, and I'm trained a little bit in painting, but not a lot. But, you know, I've got some training in graphic design and all of that. But I also have training in business. And so, you know, that's where you hear these things like the corporate shaman. But essentially that means that no matter what field you work in, your reason for living, your purpose for being, your day-to-day choices and actions are being informed through your relationship with your higher self or your navigator or source, anything like that, and that it's very conscious. And that you really don't just have your day job, which it doesn't matter what that is, and then you have what your personal interests are. Your personal interests dictate to you what type of jobs you're going to take, what type of work you can do, that you will give yourself to fully. And there's a lot of people that, you know, maybe they would do a whole career change, you know, if they could. But then there's some people that really like what they're doing. They like their chosen field, and it doesn't look like the arts, but you can still be creative within it, and you can certainly work with others to co-create a new world. And that's really my focus is how can I show up in the world like Buckminster Fuller did? He said, call me Trim Tab. the trim tab is a part of the rudder on a ship. It's like a small rudder. You can't actually turn a large rudder on a ship, but you can manipulate the trim tab, which then allows the water to flow in, and then the whole big rudder turns as a result. I don't know if I'm describing the mechanics of that precisely, but the point is that a small, somewhat insignificant piece of the hull was able to turn an entire ship. Right. And so I'm very interested in working strategically with artists and with business people. The business people, visionary business people, not only are they working creatively in their realm, but they also can commission works of art, creative expressions, or startup companies that are inspired as well. And so there's just because someone doesn't consider themselves particularly creative in the traditional sense, there's a lot of ways to be creative, utilizing the skills that you already have. It's just the mind that you're bringing to those skills.
Right. I think the aspect of the individual, in other words, what is the condition of the individual when they are most aligned with themselves, most authentic with themselves, and most in the flow where the idea comes in and it gracefully conveys into effect and it doesn't get regurgitated by the mind analyzing it. That state of mind, if you will, I think as part of the new commerce is being dynamic enough with the employee relationship, where the employee is always fulfilling their joy. In other words, if the nature of the culture of the company shifts and the person is no longer in joy, that the employer wouldn't want to see that condition happen. Because if there's not joy, if there's not that alignment, then you've dropped out of the groove, out of the creative flow of the potential that can happen. And I think a lot of the new commerce is about, you know, you look at businesses like Apple and Google, and their work environment is so untethered, it is so undefined, that authentic person can come out and feel relatively safe, because a lot of times the creative impulse, like you mentioned earlier, it's changing the storyline of the culture. It's changing the story itself. And for an individual to come up with inspiration that kind of bucks the trend, and unless they feel safe or they feel bold, one of the two, then that inspiration doesn't come fully into effect.
Right. Well, inspiration has to be actively sought for. And the model that I've put together, anyone were to go to a website called artearthevolve.com, there's two major parts to what I present. And one is context, the point of the context, whether it's for artists or business people or whoever, is that your counterparts in the past in a healthy society were the shamans, or they were the merchant priests. They were somehow using their skills in relationship with their connection to the divine to help society. So that's the context. Then there's the actual practices. What's the lifestyle that you're going to engage in? And it comes down to a certain extent in what I would call three major directions of technical development. One, and you could consider it a three-legged stool. If you were to remove any of those legs, the whole thing would collapse. And I call them receive, realize, and render. And to be able to render something is just to be able to, if you're a business person, you know, start a business. If you're a filmmaker, you're able to write the script and then set up the script in a way that you know how much the film is going to cost, and then, you know, work with all the different players on the set to be able to shoot the film, and work with the editors to edit the film, and you know, that's a technical skill set. Same with painting, same with dancing. But then you've got where's the idea going to come from? So you want to be able to drop into inspiration. And once you've got that great idea, there was a director named Stephen Gagan who wrote and directed Syriana. And he said, the inspired mind is where you go, and great stuff just gets handed to you. So, you know, that great idea that is worth rendering. But let's say you've got the great idea and you have the skill set to render that great idea, but you don't have the capacity to actually draw that goal into your reality. And that's where you start having the conversation around manifestation and how resonating beings and ideas move towards each other. And the thing that's really interesting about those receiving techniques and realizing techniques is that they're in the realm of the mystic. So you can go to any of your major traditions or even, you know, various neo-shamanic traditions and stick to it. You know, you do the meditations, do the qigong, do what you need to do to open up that channel, to raise your own vibration so that you can effectively connect your inspired idea with an actual reality. And all three of those are really important to have developed in tandem and at the same quality of strength, like that you actually can, that you are as skilled in all three of them at a similar level of capability. It's kind of like the 10,000 hours model translated times three. Are you familiar with what I mean by that, the 10,000 hours to achieve mastery?
Yeah, I believe so. But when you fold it over the three separate arenas, that kind of compounds it.
It does, but it doesn't have to. I mean, you're doing them all at once. They all kind of relate to each other. But the point is you can't just be a really technically sound filmmaker without being able to have great ideas or to raise the funds. You can't raise the funds and not have a great idea, even if you can raise the funds and you have the team together, because it's just going to be empty. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that can be profitable. There's a lot of films that can be profitable, a lot of projects that can be profitable without being quote-unquote great. But, you know, if we're having a conversation where we're striving for great, you want to have really great ideas. You want to have that thing that, and what's going on there is your classic hero's journey, where you're going outside of the village compound where it's safe and warm and cozy, and you go to where it's dangerous and you challenge yourself, and what you receive in the process is gold, you know, metaphorically. It's insights for the village compound to to use and for its own sustenance and balance. And that's what we need right now. You know, we've got a an actuality of a global village without an actuality of a truly universal circle of care.
Right. I like what you said about leaving the village, leaving the comfort, leaving the known of the village and going into the unknown and going into the unsurety to leave the comfort zone. I think that an important thing to keep in mind is, so say perhaps you've been engaged in, oh, I don't know, pick an industry, financing, and you've done books for a company for 20 years, and you've been having ideas about maybe a better model of how we support each other with currency, or maybe even it's with something that's the next step beyond currency. And the ideas don't seem to fit the life that you're living now. In other words, that impulse to leave the village, the impulse to leave the known. An important aspect to keep in mind is when you are bold enough to walk out of the village, just by the process of that movement, you get more information. I mean, oftentimes, right, we want to see the whole picture. We want to lay out the whole flipping journey before we even start walking. And that's
right.
It's not how it works. It's an unfolding thing that's dynamic and alive. And to trust yourself enough to say, well, damn it, these ideas are bold, they feel powerful, and I've been holding on to them for a while, but I need to convert, I need to engage them. And when you make that choice to actually do that and you engage it in action, new information shows up that guides you along the way, and you don't need to know every step of the journey. And I think it can help people kind of get off their duff and be a little more bold with themselves when they understand that it's not a static model, that it's like you write down the whole plan before you even engage the process. No. When you feel pregnant with inspiration and shy on action, then it's time to engage, and when that does, new information comes that guides you along the journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I've always thought of it as a I had a very brief soldiering background, and you know, and there's been I don't care for gratuitous action films as much as things that tell true stories of soldiers, but I've always resonated with that need to know basis, and that I'm really, my connection with my navigator, my connection with my higher self, is my line of communication, and I don't have to get the full download all at once. I just need to be directed, and I need to know. It's really, for me, a game of hot and cold, left, right, you know, what do I do now, and being guided moment to moment. And the step one for that is to start a meditation practice that is focused on getting you connected with your higher source of wisdom. And so, you know, and that can be in the form of, you know, psychic development classes, Buddhist meditation, Christian centering prayer, Qigong, Tai Chi, anything like that, TM. That's ultimately the goal of those practices, is to allow the still, quiet voice. There's a saying in A Course in Miracles that the ego's voice speaks first and it speaks loudest. ego, I think that it can be reduced into some sort of thing that's not useful to us. I think it's very useful, but the point is it doesn't have all the answers. And if through meditation we can learn to distinguish the still small voice that is truly wise and truly knows what we're here to do, while we're consulting the ego for our basic needs around survival and personal care and comfort, that's not the point of us being here. I think the point of us being here is to create. We're co-creators. And after millennia, we finally arrived at a point where as screwed up and as terribly complex and violating the whole thing seems to be, we finally arrived at a point where individuals can be empowered to be creative. We can go back to a village model of generalists and creative people. Our social institutions have to catch up, you know, politics and the way we distribute resources. But those will all come out of an enlightened society, an enlightened perspective. So for me, it all starts with getting people engaged in practices that's going to engage them individually to their own source of wisdom. Because you can't mandate any of these things. You can't make a law that everybody should be fed and clothed. That's going to emerge naturally out of an enlightened society. The Shambhala tradition of Trungpa Rinpoche, who founded Naropa and the Shambhala International, and that's what they're trying to do. That's a very clear goal of their organization, is to create an enlightened society. And it's a long-term, it's not something that happens overnight, and it happens one person at a time. And it can happen in so many areas. Where I'm particularly interested in is in the area of the arts and in the area of business. There's another project that I'm involved in called Sacred Commerce. And the sacred commerce kind of goes beyond your traditional triple bottom line. Triple bottom line is people, planet, and profits. And you know, as long as all of those are being addressed, you have a quote unquote conscious business model. Well, this sacred commerce introduces the concept of a fourth bottom line, which is spirituality. The return to self. Why do you do what you're doing? If it's not fulfilling you at your deepest level, then you shouldn't be doing it. But if it is, and it happens to be business, there's this meme that we're trying to develop, which is that we recognize that business and commerce is becoming the major engine of driving society. And not everybody's going to want to hear that. They may think that business is bad or that sacred commerce is an oxymoron. But it's not religion. The major driver of culture is not religion or politics as it was in the past. It's really coming down to how we're engaging with each other. And commerce has been known in societies past be a gift from the goddess, because there is there's a couple ways you can grow a nation and make it strong and healthy. And one is through war and conquest, which you would consider more the masculine approach, or the feminine approach, which is through relationships and trade, fair trade specifically. You know, you're all working together. But you're not going to get that kind of fair trade unless the consciousness of both cultures is operating from a place where they truly respect each other and care for each other. And so that is another project of mine that I'm working on with a gentleman named Ayman Sawaf. You can go to sacredcommerce.com to take a look at that. And I'm just supporting that meaning to grow and that movement to grow through producing content for it, supporting the site, and creating a space where you could say your modern day merchant priest or modern day knight of commerce can come together with others and grow deeper in your own personal spiritual growth process, but then also connect with others and engage in projects and ideas that can help to, you know, create a world that works for everybody.
Right. I like the idea of what you said earlier about machines fulfilling a lot of the mechanics of living, if you will, raising food, creating the baseline substance that we need as a culture to survive. And then we advance to the volume of people on the planet, 7 billion. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if we have so many people on the planet and the human resources it takes to sustain us is going down, there's a whole lot of leftover human consciousness. What the hell do you do with that? And I like the idea, the notion of you touched on it when you said if you're not passionately engaged in what you're doing, I think a lot of the new culture will be an exchange of passion. For example, if I'm a designer of, say, a sports car, maybe a Ferrari or something, and I'm sitting at the suspension, I'm looking at it on my computer, and I'm trying to figure out how do I manage the center of gravity of the car, how do I manage the orientation of the tires to the asphalt, that I can take this corner at an even faster speed and still feel confident. And so as a designer, I'm passionately engaged in manifesting what is possible in this moment. And then you take that and you go on the flip side of it, and you're a driver that loves to feel a car perform. And you love driving a car fast through a windy mountain canyon. That's a passion in and of itself. And so the two passions kind of mirror each other. And I think a lot of the new commerce is, like you were saying, everybody is engaged sincerely and wholeheartedly in the passionate expression of their desire. And on the flip side of that, people always enjoy observing human passion expressed, like live music performances or sports or that creative arena. So I think part of the new culture is moving away from the kind of the mechanics or the drudgery of creating the food and supply of the populace, and more into an artistic expression of your most authentic inspiration.
Yes. Well, I think we're at a crossroads. You know, we can take all of this technology and insight that we have now and turn this planet around, make it a garden university, where everyone is cared for and gets to pursue their joy and their bliss and their passion. Or we can let the old model hang on and really just run us off a cliff, because it worked and it's not working anymore. We've crossed that line, I believe, where it's really serving us. Some people may say it never served us. I don't agree with that. I think every culture, there's this, in the integral philosophy, there's this process. I think they call that dialectic process of one cultural meme emerges in reaction to the previous cultural meme. So out of this, and the previous cultural meme has their thesis, their body of dogma. This is the way things are. The new culture emerges as an antithesis, and then there becomes a synthesizing process that occurs, out of which a new thesis emerges, out of which another cultural meme has to emerge in antithesis, and on it goes. And what I think we're doing right now is we're outgrowing old ways of doing things that were really great for the previous cultural meme, but it's not so great moving forward. You know, we are making a mess of things. It's not sustainable. Our diapers, metaphorically, are overflowing into our food bowl.
Right.
And we need to grow up as a species. And that's, and it almost feels so mapped out, like this process must be going on in millions of worlds throughout the universe. It's our turn. This is our kind of moment of maturation as a species. And it's not just, I believe our species isn't the end-all, be-all. I believe we're just another organ on this planetary being that you could mythopoetically refer to as Gaia. There's something very unique and incredible just about the planet itself that makes me relate to it as that's the point. Is the planet, and that we're a functionary of that planet, and then the creative people are a functionary within the human species. There's a metaphor that I relate to, not to bolster any kind of elitist ego, but it's the idea of blood cells, red blood cells, white blood cells, and red blood cells. Their role in the body is very important, but it's pretty basic. You know, take out the nutrients to all the parts of the body and then remove the waste from those parts of the body, run it through the filtering systems, and on it goes. And it's a pretty much take out the food, you know, distribute the food for the body, and then take out the trash. But then you have white blood cells who have knowledge, they have insight and wisdom on how to deal with predatorial elements within the body. And a white blood cell, can fight off a disease that it never personally encountered, but that the body encountered before. So it almost has almost like a reincarnated memory, like it has a way of accessing information on how to fight a particular disease that it didn't learn through direct experience. And so you have this, and so I think that there are people, and I believe everybody has the talent and everybody is unique and wonderful, and there are people whose job it is to be kind of like white blood cells on the planet, but instead of, you know, correcting, you know, diseases per se, well, they are correcting diseases. They're correcting errors in thinking. An artist like the Wachowski siblings that created the Matrix series, they are really raising the vibration. People that, you know, chemists and scientists that discover ways to feed and clothe or provide energy for millions of people that are going without, that's a high-impact individual. Not everybody has to be that, but the people who are should really be that. They should really be encouraged to follow those big dreams and to be adequately trained to achieve those big dreams, because you can have a big dream but then be relatively skillless, and it's an opportunity that was missed.
Yeah, I think a lot of times the it's kind of like for the for us collectively as the masses, all the individual citizens, we're not really taught the scale and the scope of opportunities in any kind of a real sense. And,
right.
You know, you were talking about just now about the bold chemists and the people who are making discoveries that are game changers. And your individual impulse might be something as simple as like folk music or poetry or something like that. And to the old brain, it might not be seen as valuable. And we were never taught about scale or scope of what's possible. What I'm getting at here is a lot of what will bring us back into balance is to honor the both the masculine, which we've been pregnant with, and the feminine, which has been discounted. If your impulse, if your inspiration isn't a big banner-waving parade kind of thing, that doesn't mean it's not important at all.
Right.
The subtle,
right.
The subtle, I've grown to really value and understand that the subtle aspects of our demeanor are ginormously huge in deciding the outcome. And so if
yeah.
you're having an inspiration and you can't see a business model, you can't wrap an idea around it about how you could make a living, but not only make a living, but how to turn around and thrive on it, where it supports you and sustains you in a very prominent and abundant way, you need to expand your thinking and engage some of the institutions that show you how to take an idea and magnify its value, so you can
yeah.
stay in that authentic inspiration, no matter how subtle or seemingly insignificant it is, and still yet honor it with the planning and the design for it to return to you more than enough, more than
I think a lot of the
next chapter will be, we'll start seeing stories of people who are taking subtle little things and making a big change in a very prominent and positive way in their own life with it.
Yeah. Starts with sitting down and closing your eyes and following some sort of centering practice. Because then, you'll be guided. You'll be guided every step of the way. And it won't matter if it's a quote-unquote huge project or a quote-unquote little project. It'll be true and proper. It'll be what's appropriate for you. And if you have 7 billion people on the planet and they're all following internal guidance, it's not really internal. It's actually... You know, I never really thought of myself as having an original idea as much as having received an idea that was there for others to receive. And that there is a broadcast of the way things should be that's being played out right now that you can't hear unless you center. And so some people might say, well, if everybody just does what they want, how's anything going to get done? Well, if everybody's operating from their ego and can't actually hear their higher self, then that's a valid argument, because you're just going to have a bunch of skin-encapsulated egos that aren't really relating to anything around them in any meaningful way, basically just trying to get their own needs met. But if you develop, as Alan Watts said, leaky margins, then the information you're getting, the direction you're getting, you're going to find it allows you to act in harmony with the rest of the planet, the rest of the planet that could also be getting guiding information as well. And then there is no better than or worse than or bigger project or smaller project. There's just co-creation.
Right. I like that. There's a collective intelligence as well as an individual intelligence. And like you said, your role in it is kind of hardwired in your DNA. And just by honoring that authentic impulse in you, you're fulfilling the your own passion, and it fits like a piece of a puzzle in the collective, because all our hearts are connected. We're not separate. There's it's that cooperative co-creation, that that collective desire for a better story for our tribe.
Yeah.
Well, do you want to share with us again how to get in touch with your material and any web page or anything that you have?
Sure. You can go to you can look me up on LinkedIn. I'm Emmanuel Otto, Immanuel Otto. I'm in Ohio. If that helps narrow the search, you can go to ArtEarthEvolve.com, ArtEarthEvolve.com, and also SacredCommerce.com, which is the project that I'm supporting as kind of a consulting producer, publisher, and a web producer as well. It's kind of the guy that operations everything that I do to support that particular project is pretty much behind the scenes, which a lot of my work is behind the scenes on various projects that have included working with the Joseph Campbell Foundation, GIAM, Spiritual Cinema Circle, Sounds True Publishing, Divine Arts Publishing. These are all businesses I've worked with in supporting their missions, and that's kind of how a lot of this is expressed through me, is finding a path where I can support people who see themselves as being in either this role as an artist, mystic with a craft, or business person, mystic with a craft, and ultimately creating relationships between those two communities in terms of visionary commissions, just connecting. Because really it starts with the story that people are being presented with. And most people aren't going to just wake up on their own. They have to be guided. And their guides are the people in society that have been privileged with power. And are taking their role as you know, their privileged position as one of stewardship and not one of lordship.
Well, you know, I wanna thank you for coming on the show. I really enjoy your insight to the creative impulse, and I think it's been a delight to share this time with you. So thank you for being on the show with us.
Well, and thank you for inviting me, Les. I really appreciate it, and I also want to say you're welcome. I'm happy to share my time in this way. I think that these conversations are so important, and hopefully they lead to the most important conversation you can have, which is between the listener and their inner being. And thank you.
Great. Well, I want to let people know that the power that you have inside of you is always enough to fulfill your dreams. your dreams aren't something that just kind of land in your lap in some awkward or arbitrary way. Your dreams are handcrafted by your heart and your soul. Your heart and your soul knows every flippant aspect about your life condition. And I think a lot of the times where we get snagged with following our dreams is we'll get that initial impulse. We'll get that idea. And the very next thought will come out of our noggin. It'll come out of our head. Like, we'll start to rationalize the idea that our heart and our soul has given us. Like, we're supposed to evaluate it or quantify it or rationalize it. Well, no, you don't have to do that. It's already been vetted for you. So when you have that dream or inspiration that comes from within you, trust that you've got the power and the resources are lining up to make that happen. But in order for that to fulfill, in order for your dreams to come true, you've got to take action on that impulse, because when you take that action, the inspiration comes in and then you bring it into effect, you change your own vibration, you get information through the motion of the action, and that information gives you a better place. You move into a more authentic understanding of your journey, and then the next inspiration comes. But if you take that first inspiration and you don't take action on it because you're rationalizing it in your flipping head, your ego's trying to quantify it as whether it's good or not, which is just crazy, insane. The heart has so much wisdom that you stop, and that flow never happens, and that new information doesn't come in, and that higher vibration is never reached. So my passion is to teach people how to be powerful in the sense of how to honor that idea, how to honor that original impulse. And I created a Personal Power Fundamentals workbook. And what this does is it describes the nature of how our karma influences our ability or inability to take action on our inspiration. Every one of us is part of the bigger puzzle. And when we can each individually show up as a powerful player, and we all do that collectively, there's nothing out of our reach. We could create anything that our heart desires. And that's a very powerful place to be. So check out the Personal Power Fundamentals workbook at newhumanliving.com. And it'll lay out the structure of how karma and power play off of each other. Another exciting thing coming up is the Human Energy Dynamics class. My heart has been telling me to hold these classes for a while now, and I've taken the action. I've secured a beautiful studio here in Boulder, Colorado, where I'm going to teach powerful fundamental principles about how you can show up for yourself in your own life. It's going to be very exciting. And talk about exciting, 2014 is stacking up to be a stellar year, the year of miracles. So our next podcast will be January 1st, New Year's Day, and the topic is 2014 miracles, because they're going to happen in spades next year. We're going to talk about the principles of miracles. So I'm so excited for our human potential. And I want to thank Seha Ganad for running the board tonight. And I want to thank you for showing up for yourself. And so until next time, take care.
This has been a New Human Living radio broadcast. You can raise your own personal power with Personal Power Fundamentals Home Study Course at newhumanliving.com. Thanks for listening.